This past week, we learned that Cook County Commissioner Jesus Chuy Garcia will not run for Chicago mayor. It shows you what kind of year we're having when an announcement that someone isn't a candidate makes headlines. But with other big names getting into the race, you might think some lesser-known candidates might be scared off. You might also be wrong. Just about all of the original field of contenders for Chicago mayor are still in it, and this week, we spend some time with mayoral hopeful Neil Salas Griffin. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest is a high-tech entrepreneur from the south side of Chicago who is not a politician. What Neil Salas Griffin has done is help start a healthcare media business at age 18, open a chain of barbershops at 19, work in the venture capital world by 22, and start a computer coding boot camp by 23. His Starter League was the first tenant at 1871, the powerhouse tech hub here in Chicago. Now he teaches at Northwestern and the University of Chicago, and he is CEO of Code Now. It's a national not-for-profit that teaches low-income high school students how to code. You might wonder why he would want to waste all of that talent on politics. Well, we are going to ask him. Neil Salas Griffin, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about that first.
Sure.
Because what drives you to want to take on the challenges of running this city when you are helping so many people now?
I didn't start with wanting to run for mayor. I started with wanting to help more people in Chicago because I love my city. And the time that I took to really dial into the details and figure out what was happening, I ran out of alternatives. I realized I had to step up. The city deserves new leadership. It deserves greater transparency, more innovation and thoughtfulness, and people with integrity who aren't interested in being career politicians that are more interested in making progress and moving on and setting someone else up for success. So that's why I'm running.
Well, by definition, the city is going to get new leadership because Mayor Emanuel isn't running.
True.
But you are not a politician. How are you dealing with the mechanics of running a campaign, the signatures, the fundraising?
I haven't done any of the things that you mentioned or, you know, a lot of other things that I'm involved in now or have accomplished by assuming that I needed to, you know, have permission to do it, you know, by some, you know, entrenched force or power or people who can tell me whether I'm qualified or not. So I always end up stepping into situations where there's a lot to figure out and learn, because in doing so, it forces creativity, it forces disruption, it forces innovation. And we're inventing new systems and processes for how to run for office, because a lot of the norms and traditions are inaccessible to people who I think would be great public servants.
Except that it seems some of the rules for running are almost designed to keep people who aren't politicians from doing it well. I mean, election lawyers are, it's almost a growth industry here in Chicago. The signature gathering process and the challenging process, all of that is almost something that has to be handled by professionals, but you're not.
Hey, well, professional can be, I guess, assessed in a number of ways. And what I would say is, you know, first, my first hire was an election lawyer, so I'm right there with you on that front. So you're going to have to, you know, eat your vegetables and take care of, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's. But that being said, there is so much that I've learned in the past year in running for mayor in this process where I've realized there is an immense opportunity to automate and really reform these processes for running for office so that more people can do it. I agree with you in that it is largely skewed towards traditional politicians and people who are, you know, among the field now, but I want to change that, and that's why I'm running, and I'm putting everything I have on the line to create that opportunity. It's the same thing I did for software development and coding. I saw an industry that was amazing in many respects, and people were inventing technologies that ended up making folks millionaires and billionaires and changing the world, but there were not a lot of people who looked differently running those companies, writing that code, building that software, inventing those new technologies, and I wanted to change that. So it took a risk and a leap in order for that change to happen, just like this will be the same thing.
And I would think that a lot of people who look at the tech world would have seen something like coding as one of those unattainable things where you had to have a base of knowledge that a lot of, frankly, a lot of low-income people wouldn't get. What did you see in that that made you go forward with the boot camp?
I started with myself. So I never extended or make an assumption about something. I try to get primary insight. So when I quit my job in venture capital early on, right out of school, I did it because I wanted to test whether I could teach myself and whether I could learn these skills having no formal or traditional training. And I holed up in my apartment in Hyde Park for over a year with a friend of mine. And he and I emerged from that apartment having built, you know, multitude of, you know, software applications and with the confidence that we can unlock and enable a lot of other people to do the same thing. So we had did something that a lot of people told us wasn't possible. And not only did we invent that, you know, new system, but we inspired so many other people to do the same thing in their cities and even in this town. So the model that we came up with, it's less about my own school being successful and it's more about the fact that so many people learn from us as a blueprint, and we were able to make this huge wave of an impact around computer science for all education in Chicago and beyond.
I don't want to spend all of the time on the mechanics of campaigns, but let us talk about how the landscape changed and explain why you stay in a race where the vote of the people who, you know, may, let's face it, people who weren't satisfied with Rahm Emanuel, now that vote is going to be split among a field of candidates that includes some familiar names to them, like County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, like Bill Daley, like Paul Vallis and Lori Lightfoot. Why didn't that chase you out of this?
I wasn't running against Rahm Emanuel. I was running for Chicago, for a better Chicago. And there may be other candidates that spend a lot of their time, you know, focusing on the mayor and getting him out. My emphasis has always been on the solutions and what I can do to make things better. And I want to keep that going. Now, that being said, there were just over 500,000 people who voted for mayor in 2015. There are over a million people in Chicago who are registered and old enough to vote who did not. I'd like to change that. Some people think it's an unsolvable problem. I'm excited by unsolvable problems because I like it to, you know, force me to invent the future. That's what I see us having an opportunity to do right now.
Now, we can't go very far into this discussion without talking about April.
Oh, yeah, the launch event. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, I went ahead and aired it out on the podcast.
Yes.
Got that out the way. That was wild.
Yeah, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, when you launched your campaign, it was literally a false start.
Oh, yeah.
You were you lost your place. You were nervous.
Oh, for sure. It was so interesting. I'm so grateful for that experience because it's humbling, one, and it shows realness in a way that is rare among people in the arena in politics, right? We were very polished and practiced and measured, and there were so many factors leading up to that moment. But I just have to say, I had a student, so you know I'm a professor at Northwestern University, mm-hmm. adjunct professor, and I teach this engineering entrepreneurship course, and one of my former students was there, you know, at this event as I'm like fumbling through the speech. And I've given, you know, hundreds of lectures, and I've been up in front of people all the time, and I've been super confident and keynoted events with thousands of people at them, and I've done all these things. But yet in that moment, something shifted, right? And I wasn't my full self and my ability to articulate my ideas clearly. And she came up to me afterwards, and she said, you know, I know this must be tough for you, but I just want to say how grateful I am, because I never thought that someone who I looked up to, who I never thought I could be like, I could relate to. And she found a way to relate to me in that moment and to lift me up. And a lot of people did. So that was really, really amazing. So from that experience, a lot of people stepped up to help out. And I learned so much from it. And we're even more confident now because of it.
Tell me what you have learned since then or because of that,
yeah,
that have helped you develop the kind of skills that would show people. Because let's face it, a lot of people are going to look at that and say, this is a high pressure job.
How's he going to handle it? Sure.
And that will tell people, yes, I can handle that pressure.
Definitely. And I think that it's less about a moment in an instance and 85 minutes, and it's more about a lifetime of service and dedication and consistent contribution to Chicago and making it better. And that's what I've been doing. So look at my work, look at my actions, look at the organizations that I run, the nonprofit boards that I serve on, the classes that I teach, the kids that I help. I'm here and I'm real. And everybody has a false start. Everybody makes a mistake. Everybody slips up every now and then. And that's okay. So long as your intentions are good and you're willing to get yourself back up. I think a lot of people appreciated it. So that was one piece. And I guess to answer your question about what I learned that I can't, you know, play the game of Chicago politics in the same way that it's always been played. And I think up till then I had been more measured and considerate for taking advice from people who had a lot of experience in how Chicago currently works as it relates to campaigns. And if we're going to invent the future, then we can't be pulled back or bogged down by taking a traditional approach. And that was probably what confused things leading up to that moment. So after that, it really liberated me to be extremely creative and experimental for how we went about running the campaign.
I think one of the criticisms then was that you didn't have very many specifics to outline about the things that you want to do. How are you addressing that now?
So the specifics that I have are right now on our website, neilfromair.com/platform, and we're slowly but surely going to be rolling out more detailed analyses. And on top of that, we're building a tool to allow people to not only understand our positions and citations and substance and solutions, but compare other candidates as well. And there are tools out there right now that help people do this, like Ballot Ready and different technologies that are Chicago homegrown. But my focus has always been on taking a very deliberate, measured, nuanced, and detailed approach to problem solving in Chicago. So understanding these issues is no small task. And I had an opportunity to surround myself with a lot of experts, a lot of really brilliant people who are interested in providing a lot of answers that are hard to get to on the surface. So I took this like a lot of time to break that down and understand that. And now I have a pretty clean set of positions, but this is just the beginning. And at the highest level, I'll tell you the spoiler is follow the money. That's where this whole conversation has to start. If we want to talk about our solutions to school, our solutions to violence, our solutions to housing, our economy, everything, all roads lead back to the vault that is, you know, City Hall right now. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, and we will talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But since you bring up experts, who are the people that you will turn to for advice? Like, who's going to be your kitchen cabinet, so to speak, on things like pensions and union contracts, transport? You know, where are you going to be getting your advice?
Well, where I've been getting my advice is from a variety of sources throughout the city. There are a lot of people who, up until recently, were probably hesitant to be named because they were either in service to or affiliated with the current mayor. And I guess there's a culture sometimes of fear associated with wanting to be affiliated with helping another candidate understand the facts and the issues and what's happening at the ground level. But that being said, I think we have a big opportunity to really bring more people into the fold. I always approach my engagements with people who are experts, not with the assumption or expectation that they endorse me or support me or are willing to be named, but are more focused on just providing as much evidence-based information as possible. So with that being said, a lot of the people who are supportive and involved in our campaign are going to be kind of revealed and brought in, and my kitchen cabinet is going to be comprised of experts in every aspect because no one mayor is going to know answers to everything. So surrounding myself with people who have those experiences is going to be critical. But that being said, crowded field of candidates, it's making it really difficult right now to have a whole, you know, list of people in a lineup saying any one person is the right person. So it's going to require some new leadership and some new energy and some new perspectives, along with never forgetting our past and the expertise of a lot of the people who were, you know, working on the solutions up till now.
What percentage of your supporters would you say have stayed the course this far?
Oh, I mean, it's been relatively unfaltering. Naturally, when you have a pretty intense volunteer-based campaign, there's going to be people who come and go. But for the most part, we've been pretty steady. Okay. Proud of that.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. My guest is Neil Salas Griffin. He is a candidate for mayor of Chicago. Let's talk about some of the issues. And I don't want you to spoil all of your stuff, but hey. I want to talk about some of the, at least the outlines of some of your plans. Let's talk about education first. One of your goals is to ensure that there are quality schools in every neighborhood. That is obviously easier said than done. How do you plan on doing that? Do you continue with charter schools that are run by private entities, specialized schools? What's your overall vision of getting neighborhood schools back on a solid footing?
I'm a volunteer teacher at Diet High School for the Arts, just off of 51st and King Drive. I grew up just a few blocks down the street at 49th and Drexel. And as many people know, Diet High School was on the list of school closings. And there were some brave community members who went on a 34-day hunger strike to keep that school open and helped it reopen. That was one school out of nearly 50 that managed to corral its community to make a difference and to keep it going. I learned how to swim growing up at that school. I know that it was under-resourced and lacked the investment and the support it needed to be successful. We have to make sure that we're prioritizing and investing in neighborhood schools first. If we don't build up our neighborhood schools and make sure that they're set up to be successful, it's almost hard to justify or make the argument that alternative investments are mandated in order for Chicago to be a better city for our kids. So first things first, making sure that we take a much deeper and closer look at neighborhood school reform in Chicago and prioritize that as an investment. And again, this all goes back to talking about money and how we're allocating those resources. And our school funds that we'd have to lobby for at the state level, the nearly $6 billion CPS budget, and the fact that special education has been, you know, taken back. You know, the control of it has been taken back by the state because we have failed to properly manage it as a city, speaks to our failure of leadership when it comes to our school system. So we need trustworthy leadership. We need people to feel like they have a greater say for who's running our schools. That's where the elected school board comes from, but with campaign limits because money's a problem in Chicago. And then just an intense focus on making sure that every neighborhood has a school that you can walk your kid to. That's my focus.
Why would an elected school board be an improvement? Why not, as some people are suggesting, a kind of a blended thing where if the mayor has the responsibility for the maintenance of the schools, some mayoral appointees and some elected people?
I've studied the arguments for and against elected school boards, and I agree that there is a high level of nuance and consideration to how to go about providing a system of selecting leadership for our public schools. That being said, there's a loss of trust in the community. We had a school leader who was convicted of a crime. We had another school leader who had to step down because he lied and violated ethics code in running our city, public schools. We have to re-engage our community members and extend trust and give them greater say and control. So there's something a little bit more unique and intangible about the mood and the culture of distrust right now in Chicago between a lot of neighborhoods and people in them and our city leadership. And we're not going to change that unless we smartly introduce a system that gives them greater democratic influence and control over who's running their schools and who's influencing their child's future.
Have you had any thoughts or reached any conclusions about how Janice Jackson is doing as school CEO?
Janice Jackson and I've had conversations before my public decision to run for mayor, and I'm a fan of a lot of the work that she's done. And I'm proud that we have somebody who came up through the system and who's deeply connected at the ground level in a position of leadership now. That being said, I think there is still a lot of frustration in the community because no one person over a short period of time can solve all of the problems. And I think that she's trying. I think that her intentions are absolutely pure and she means well. I think that in addition to her as leader, we're going to need community support even more so than we have. And that's not going to happen with her on her own. That's going to happen with, you know, greater mayoral leadership as well.
I want to turn to public safety. We are going to have to speak around the elephant in the room because as we are recording this,
it's happening.
The jury is deliberating on the Jason Van Dyke murder trial for the killing of Laquan McDonald. So we can't really talk about that.
I mean, we can talk about whatever you want. But I'm willing to.
But what we can talk about that might not develop while between now and when this program airs is the overall issue. Well, first off, your father was a police officer for 3 decades.
Yes.
Do you have feelings of support or doubt about this whole consent decree process that the city has gone through? Mayor Emanuel is leaving with something in place that is going to be looked over by the Attorney General's office, where there will also be new leadership. But what do you think of the document that they have produced and the court supervision that there will be?
There's more that needs to be done with the consent decree for people to fully understand its implications. And I'm working to demystify a lot of that because it's a fairly dense read. And there's a lot of complexity to documents like this and what the implications are. And I think one of the biggest challenges we have as a city is effectively communicating with community members about what things mean and when it comes to accountability. And, you know, I'm an adjunct professor also at Northwestern's Law School. And some of my colleagues there I've had conversations with who were involved in the community proposal that led to some of the changes in the consent decree. And I would say that while we are making progress and while it's a win to even have this on the table, there's certainly a lot more accountability and scrutiny required that the community is going to have to lobby for, and we're going to have to support them to enact.
Do you think the public hearings that are planned for this are going to be as beneficial as the administration has said they should be?
I don't know. I would like that to be true. However, I'm going to assume that it's not enough. And I am actively working on scalable means to provide greater access to these conversations for people who don't necessarily have time to participate or attend these hearings, but still want to have their voices heard and still deserve our overt effort to inform them of what's going on and what this would mean for them. And right now, I think we're very limited in our capability and our thinking as far as how hard we try to involve all of Chicago in these decisions as they're happening. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who are struggling in different parts of the city that are concerned about crime and safety and issues with the police. But there's a disconnect between that concern and their awareness of what is actually happening on the ground with these issues in these conversations. So I am trying to be the bridge for a lot of that conversation.
And we are like 2 years into the efforts of the city itself and the police department itself to reform itself. And we still don't have the civilian component of the civilian office of police accountability. How troubling is that to you that we still don't have that civilian advisory group? And the city says, well, we can't get the community to agree.
This is all troubling, and this is all why I'm running for mayor. I got tired of waiting, and there's this stasis. We're not moving fast enough on things, and because of it, people are struggling, people are dying, and people are moving away. And I got fed up with that. I decided I wasn't going to sit on the sidelines and wonder why anymore and jump right into the arena, get some answers, move things forward, and get serious about being solution-oriented in leadership. So yeah, you're right. Things take longer than they should. Most people aren't aware of what's actually happening and why not. I'm getting to the bottom of it, and I'm going to bring everyone along on this journey with me.
I want to get one, at least one more topic in, and that's jobs.
Yeah.
Because that's, as you say, it's all about the money. Well, it's also all about what people are able to earn money. How do you get big companies to locate operations in struggling communities, which is merely one dimension of a much larger problem?
Well, so that one dimension is one piece I wanted to almost couch that with, which is net new jobs come from, you know, small businesses and entrepreneurs and startups. So my emphasis has always been on helping people fish rather than just giving them fish. And that's been my whole life's work, is I help people start businesses and get skills that get them into jobs that are well-paying, often high technology, but very often just lifestyle changing for so many folks. The way that we encourage more businesses to insert themselves in communities that are struggling is to provide, to make it a rational choice, to make it a business decision, to make it easy. You have to provide the right level of incentives as well as the training in those communities so that the workforce and talent that's available and accessible is enticing. And right now we have failed to properly invest in the educational and vocational resources to build up those communities in a way where they'd be in high demand. That's a failure of our education system. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a great position to change that, because outside of the public sector, in both private and nonprofit, I've been a champion and leader in Chicago for the past 8 years.
We've got a little bit of time left, maybe a minute or so. Do you approve of the City Colleges of Chicago's current configuration, with different schools having individual specialties? This is something that started under Richard Daley, but really came into its own under Rahm Emanuel.
I wouldn't say I have approval of it. I do believe that there is a way to make the system work a lot better. However, an analysis of that system and how it's functioning right now and what it would need to become is something that I'm currently doing, because I've done work with the City Colleges. I've integrated my curriculum from my own coding boot camp into the City Colleges in partnership with Rahm Emanuel and Chicago Public Schools. And that experience has informed my perspective in a way that gives me confidence that there needs to be an immense amount of reform and thoughtfulness for how the system actually works over time. So there's no hard answer there yet. However, that is one thing that I have direct experience with that I'm very passionate about solving.
But you're not talking about tearing it up.
No, not tearing it up, because I think that having a scope and a focus is a good thing. And having people who can focus on a particular school for a particular trade is actually really clarifying for a lot of folks and what they aspire to do. It has a vocational orientation. That being said, it's not good enough, and we're not training towards the future enough. And that's why my school was so successful. That's why all this whole movement of coding and software development worked, because I was able to kind of run circles around a lot of these traditional institutions for how I delivered my education.
That's going to be our final word. That is mayoral candidate Neil Salas Griffin. Thank you for spending
this
time with us.
This was great.
To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That is WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue. We'll focus on the governor's race next week, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.